Going to take a look, as I mentioned, at a bounty of compelling Badger State stories with Michael B., a Madison freelance writer. He can usually be found pursuing an interest in all things Wisconsin. He's the author of ClassicWisconsin.com, and he recounts 30 of the most captivating moments in the state history in the book It Happened in Wisconsin. It's published by Globe Pequot Press. I've had a chance to read the book. Forgot to bring it with me today. I wish I had it, because I always like to have the at least the table of contents in front of me when I'm visiting with a guest. But I left it at home today, unfortunately. But I did read it, so I'm sure I'll get along fine. And obviously, Michael knows all about the book, so we won't have any problems with that. But there are some really cool stories. It's a collection of Wisconsin stories. And Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Larry.
You've got quite a range in time here in these stories.
Yes, it does. It does run chronologically, 30 stories, as you mentioned, and we start at 3000 BC with the village of Aztalan, the Mississippian Indian village near Lake Mills, and then it runs all the way through up until the 1990s. And like you said, it's some of the more interesting, fascinating stories from Wisconsin history are here. But it's not a textbook. It's a decidedly popular history of Wisconsin. I wanted to include things that were famous and things that we all know about, but also things that might be a little more obscure, things that are inspirational as well as tragic, and just plain weird, because we've got our share of those types of stories too. We're very blessed in that regard.
Well, I tell you what, and some of the stories, I knew about some of those stories, but even then, it was fun to read about them again, and certainly in an entertaining and fun way to learn. And frankly, there were quite a few stories I didn't know a thing about.
Well, thank you, Larry, and that was my intention in making a book, writing a book that was entertaining, even though some of the stories in there may be stories that we all know about here in Wisconsin, things that we learned about in our fourth grade local history class, because there are significant events that occurred here that, you know, we simply have to talk about. But my intention was to try to shed some new light on some of those old stories and shed some light on some obscure stories that folks may not know all that much about.
Yeah, and I will invite listeners, if you have a question about a story that might or might not be in the book, or maybe you've got a good Wisconsin story yourself that Michael might be writing another book, you never know,
yeah,
about some strange happenings in Wisconsin, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. And, you know, as a sort of a Civil War buff, I was surprised to read your chapter called Passion in Prairie du Chien.
Yes.
Which involves the future president of the Confederate States of America.
That's right. And this is a story that has been told many times over the years regarding Jefferson Davis, who was a young West Point lieutenant who was stationed at Fort Crawford in Prairie du Chien in the early 1830s. And Jefferson Davis, while he was stationed there, served under a gentleman by the name of Zachary Taylor, who was destined to become the 12th president of the United States. And that's kind of interesting enough as it is, but what happened while Jefferson Davis was stationed in Prairie du Chien, he fell in love with Zachary Taylor's daughter, Sarah. And this is a story that's been told many times over the years, a story of their courtship between the young couple. This was done in defiance of Zachary Taylor, who stated very clearly that he had no intention of allowing his daughter to marry a career military man. And history has written that this is why Zachary Taylor opposed the marriage of Jefferson Davis and his daughter, Sarah. But there's some extenuating circumstances, and of all the chapters in the book, this was the one that I really was able to unearth some pretty remarkable information. We know that Zachary Taylor and Jefferson Davis never really seemed to hit it off. And now we know why. In researching the story, I came across two newspaper articles, independent of one another, indicating that Jefferson Davis, while he was in Wisconsin, had married a Winnebago Indian woman and fathered a child while serving in Wisconsin. This was roughly the same time that he was courting Sarah Taylor. Joe Davis, as written in his obituary, was the son of Jefferson Davis, the father of the Southern Confederacy. And ironically, Joe Davis, the alleged son of Jefferson Davis, fought for the North in the Civil War and lived a long and prosperous life in northeastern Wisconsin. He died in the 1930s at the age of roughly 100.
Oh, my goodness. And you may or may not know, does he still have descendants in Wisconsin?
Not that we know of. We're continuing to look into this. I've contacted the Brown County Library System, Mary Jane Herber, who's the local historian in Brown County, has access to the census rolls of the Menominee Nation, and we're looking into that. And I'm also pursuing some information from the Menominee Nation itself as far as what they may know about Joe Davis. To our knowledge, he had no descendants.
Oh, interesting. Must have been fun to put this book together. How did you decide on the 30 moments?
Well, I'm still debating in my head. There were so many things to choose from. And as I said, I approached this with the idea that this was going to be a popular history. This is not a textbook. I first narrowed down the monumental events in Wisconsin history that needed to be included. And then also I considered the famous and the obscure and the weird things that have happened in the state, the sensational things such as much as we get uncomfortable talking about it, Ed Gein and Jeffrey Dahmer. You simply cannot talk about Wisconsin without mentioning some of these touchstones. So it was a difficult but pleasant chore, I must say, narrowing this down. And there's certainly room for some more volumes of this book, that's for sure.
And how did you research the stories then?
Wow, Wisconsin is blessed. We're very lucky to have terrific scholarly sources for our history. And one good feature of the book that I think that folks will appreciate is that it's heavily footnoted, and the source materials are all included there in the footnotes. Many of the sources are books that you may recognize from the Wisconsin section at your local bookstore, but I was able to take those excellent scholarly sources and distill them into taking the most compelling parts of those source materials and distilling them into these 30 distinct chapters that I have here. Each chapter is unique in and of itself. They're not related to one another, and they run roughly 2,000 words. So it's an easy read, enjoyable read. It's something to take to the beach with you this summer.
Michael B., our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin has a wealth of characters and stories, and 30 of them are included in my guest's book, It Happened in Wisconsin. The author is Michael B. of Madison. The book is published by Globe Pequot Press. Really pleased to have him along. It's going to be a lot of fun as we visit with him about some of the crazy things that he has uncovered, some of the interesting tales, and also some of the facts that might be not as well known regarding some of the major events that took place in this state. If you have a question for him about an event or wondering whether or not it's included in the book, or maybe you've got a story of your own that you might want to share with us that has some Wisconsin significance, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And Bob in Darlington's on the line and has been waiting a bit, Mike, so let's go to Bob. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Bob. Hi, a great show.
Thank you.
And one thing I'd like to tell you, you probably realize this, is that in southwestern Wisconsin, we have a lot of older cities that kind of would really bump up against a lot of original cities out east, you know, for their age, and you know, including cities like Shelbyville,
yes,
and Linden, Mineral Point, Prairie du Chien, and Green Bay. And these cities go back a lot further than a lot of people realize.
Good point. And
yes,
some of those, well, go ahead, Michael, a comment from you.
Well, just to second what the caller has said, I think in this state there's a lot of kind of feeling that if you're going to do anything, you got to go north. Everyone's in kind of a northern mindset, whether you're vacationing or what have you, and folks from Illinois all seem to want to go north, even though to Illinois folks, Lake Geneva is north, northern Wisconsin. But we have this kind of mentality of going north. And I think southwestern Wisconsin, as the caller said, is one of the really underappreciated regions of the state. It's a great place to vacation. It's a beautiful area. And the history there is very rich, as the caller said. So I would second everything he mentioned.
Yep, and there are some. You've got stories from Southwest Wisconsin in your book.
Well, absolutely. The one we were talking about just before the break, as far as Jefferson Davis spending time in Prairie du Chien in the 1830s, and of course he went on to become the one and only president of the Confederacy. He served under Zachary Taylor, who went on to become president of the United States. So, you know, there's no shortage of history in the southwestern part of the state.
Yeah, it sure isn't. Bob, thanks. I appreciate it very much. And some of those cities have been around an awfully long time, as he says.
Oh, yeah. They were there from the territorial days.
Yep.
Before statehood.
Yep. Thanks, Bob. Esther in West Allis, your turn. Hi, Esther.
Hello. I was late to the program, so I don't know if you mentioned this. Something else about Prairie du Chien and Dr. Beaumont and the experiment that he did there. It was one that I read about when I was in high school, and that was many years ago. My son lived in Prairie du Chien on Beaumont Street, and the doctor had his little hospital there. I don't know if this was during the French and Indian Wars, but it was quite a while ago. And he had an Indian, he was treating an Indian with an open wound in the stomach.
Yes.
And it healed, not completely. So what he did was he took a piece of string and put meat on it, put that into this Indian's stomach, and there it was digested.
Yes.
And that was his experiment.
Wow. Are you familiar with that story, Michael?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, this is a perfect example of so many stories and so little time to put them in the book. It's not included in the book, but yeah, this is a very well-known case study that the caller has mentioned regarding Dr. Beaumont and his observations of the digestive system that are still applicable to this day. His experiments in the digestive system were groundbreaking. And as the caller mentioned, this was conducted on a person who had received a gunshot wound to the side, which didn't quite heal, and Dr. Beaumont was able to observe the digestive system by tying food on a string and lowering it into the digestive system of the patient.
Oh man! Oh, that's it reminds me. I don't know why it should, but at the University of Wisconsin, the digestive system of dairy cattle was studied in a very similar way, and I believe we still have what are called fistulated cows on campus.
That's right. There are cows on campus with portholes, more or less, embedded in their sides. And you can go down to the milking barns on the UW campus every day. It's open to the public during their afternoon milkings, I believe at 3 o'clock, and watch the students there from the Agricultural College conduct the milkings in the milking barn, and you can also ask to see the cows with the portholes in their sides.
Thanks, Esther. Mike in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Yes, does Irrigus have any information about the Evelyn Hartley mystery which occurred in 1953? It occurred in La Crosse. The young lady vanished, and she has not been seen. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Okay.
I do not have anything included in the book about that. I know very little about the case. I believe there may be some speculation that since she disappeared right around the time that Ed Gein was perpetrating his crimes in central Wisconsin, that it may be related. But that, as far as I know, that's only speculation, and that's really all I know about the case.
But Ed Gein, is, as you mentioned earlier, is included in your book. Obviously, you couldn't have that book without having, I think, a story about Ed.
Well, that's right. And, you know, that story has been told so many times, I wanted very much to kind of put a different perspective on things, and I think I've done that in the respect that this is something that the little community of Plainfield is going to have to deal with forever. And Plainfield obviously is a small town. The folks there knew all the victims. They knew Ed Gein, and this was, needless to say, very traumatic occurrence on the folks in Plainfield, something they really don't like to discuss. And in the book, I kind of emphasized the legacy that Plainfield has to contend with. Right up until a year ago, somebody who owned land in Plainfield advertised that land for sale on eBay and advertised it as Ed Gein's farmland, and the person who was trying to sell the land was asking for an exorbitant price, and the advertisement for Ed Gein's farmland received, who knows, 30,000 hits in a day from people who were curious about this, and eventually the sale, the advertisement, was taken off of eBay. A victims' rights group asked that it be taken off, and it was taken off. But this happened just 1 year ago. And as I mentioned in the book, Ed Gein is the ghoul who keeps on giving, and it's something that we're strapped with forever.
Yeah. And let's go to Michael now in Toma. I'm sorry, Brian in Oshkosh is next. Brian, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing? You can call me Mike if you want, but just like they say in Wisconsin, don't call me late for dinner.
All right.
Anyway, what happened was, when you're talking about Ed Gein there, it just brought to mind the idea that his gravestone has been stolen and sold on eBay and returned many, many times. But
yes,
I would really pay much more attention in some respects to what little Wisconsin people know about their state, and I'm glad a book like this comes out because, my gosh, I mean, I hear people from Wisconsin headed out west to go find history, headed out east to find history, and it's really under our feet. Yeah, I'm pretty amazed going back to the Jonathan Carver expedition way back in the early 1700s, you know, and it's just amazing to see the stories that came out of that about lost and mysteriously appearing people from his expedition. People showing up in hollow logs decades later, skeletons, and
yeah,
God only knows.
Well, I agree, and thank you for calling, because the caller's absolutely right. We've got history right under our feet, you know, going back to ancient history. And I hope this book was able to present a lot of that stuff in an entertaining fashion that that just about anybody could enjoy.
And I believe, if I'm trying to remember now, because it's been a little while since I finished reading the book, but in terms of exploration, you have a story or two relating to explorers exploring Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. Jean Nicolet, pardon my French, Jean Nicolet is generally credited with discovering the area, although we know now that he was not the first French explorer to be in the area. But the fact of the matter is, Jean Nicolet was lost. He was about as lost as you could get. He was a half a world lost. He had set out to find the Orient, to find Asia, thinking that the Great Lakes were a passage to the Orient. And so when he stepped on shore just outside of present-day Green Bay, he put on a silk robe and fired his pistols, thinking that he was meeting the quote-unquote people of the sea or the Asians. And obviously, he was a little off his mark.
Yeah, just a little.
A little off his mark.
Well, let's go to Michael in Toma next. Now, Michael, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hello. Yeah, I just curious if they had anything in this book you were talking about here on the three winners over in Fond du Lac there of the lottery system there.
Oh.
Oh, no, that's a good question. And no, I do not. And that is very recent history, and that's interesting. But no, I don't have anything in the book about that. The book ends roughly in the early 90s. We've got, in 1989, we've got a chapter about the famous instant replay game between the Packers and the Bears.
Yep.
And then after that, a chapter regarding Jeffrey Dahmer. And the lottery winners, I think, are very, very recent, last few years, if I'm not mistaken.
And just for those who are wondering what the heck's the story about, there were three people in Fond du Lac area who won very large amounts of cash. Is that right, Michael?
Yes, as far as I know, big winners.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for I think one of the first big, like, $100 million winner came from that area.
Yeah, and I'm not an expert on this, and I haven't looked into it, but I think a couple of the winners bought their ticket at the same store, or at the very least, all three winners were
in the same street.
Yeah, the same street, yeah.
Jenny and Tomahawk, it's your turn now. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is very interesting. I want to be sure to get the book and read it.
Thank you, Jenny.
I wonder if you have the Peshtigo Fire.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, and thank you for bringing it up. The Peshtigo Fire, again, there's an event that you really need to examine when you're talking about Wisconsin history. And some of the source material I used, the primary source material I used, was an eyewitness account written by Father Peter Pernin, who was the Peshtigo Parish priest at the time of the fire. And his eyewitness account of the fire is included in a book as well that you can get at most bookstores in the local history section. And I highly recommend this reading. It is so compelling. The humanity involved in this fire is absolutely heartbreaking, and that's something that, you know, time has diminished, but when you take a look at the eyewitness accounts, it's absolutely heartbreaking, and the dynamics of the fire itself are fascinating as well. This was a fire that was so great that it created its own atmospheric circulation. It created a hurricane. This was a hurricane of fire that occurred. The core temperature was roughly 1,500 to 2,000 degrees. And you had situations where people who fled to the Peshtigo River had to fight off drowning because the air above the water was so hot. And then once the fire ended, many people died from hypothermia because the temperatures went from extreme hot to being cold once they got out of the river. So it was an absolute tragedy. 2,400 people are estimated to have died. The scale of it was just immense. And even today, folks who are conducting genealogy in that area might come to a gap in the family lineage in 1871 because families were obliterated. They just vanished without a trace.
Yeah.
Many survivors lived with disfiguring scars. This was a monumental event, to say the least.
Yeah. Thanks, Jenny. Thank you very much for calling. If you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Talking with Michael B. about his book, It Happened in Wisconsin, published by Globe Pequot Press. And Sharon in Soldiers Grove, or I'm sorry, Sharon in Elk Grove is next. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
Hello.
We live right down in the southwest corner of Wisconsin. There's a little community named Elk Grove, used to be a community, and we're in the township. We live in the township. But they say that there was trouble with the Blackhawks, and I don't know if the war was actually in this area or not, but they built a fort. And there's also a big railroad interchange that was there, real close, and that's called Ipswich. And I wondered if you have done any research in that area and if you could tell us where this fort was.
No, I have not done any research, and I'm not all that familiar, so it's all new to me. What was the name of the railroad station?
Ipswich. I-P-S-W-I.
Oh, yeah, okay. That does seem to ring a bell, but no, I'm not familiar with that at all.
Sorry, we can't help you out on that one, Sharon. And the State Historical Society might be a place to take a look.
Oh, yeah. And I had mentioned earlier how lucky we are to have terrific source materials from which I was able to write this book. Many are produced by the State Historical Society. Folks may not realize that the Wisconsin State Historical Society has one of the most complete collections of newspapers in the world. I believe it's second only to the Library of Congress in its newspaper collection. So I was able to do a lot of research looking at newspapers at the State Historical Society. Terrific resource. Just a terrific resource.
John in Ashland, your turn now. Hi, John.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm wondering if you have anything about Kennedy's visit to Ashland.
John Kennedy Jr.'s visit to Ashland. Is that what you're referring to?
I thought it was President Kennedy came here and drove down to Mellon and picked out the granite for his gravestone, and it was milled in Ashland, is what I've read in local accounts.
Wow, now I did not know that. That is very interesting. There is a chapter regarding the Kennedys' 1960 campaign through Wisconsin, which was a very pivotal primary state in the presidential election. And the speculation and the legend has been that JFK Jr. was conceived in the state of Wisconsin. So I have a little bit of fun looking into that in one of the chapters. I was not aware that he selected the granite for his tombstone from Wisconsin. That's fascinating.
No, I did not know that either. John, thanks. Appreciate it. Bob in Tishigan, your turn now. Hi, Bob.
I haven't read the book, but I'm looking forward to it. I wondered if the author noticed that Charles Whittlesey, who was in charge of the Lost Battalion, he was the first Medal of Honor winner in the First World War, was from Florence, Wisconsin.
No.
I did not know that. Know that.
Is
he buried
father,
there?
No, he's actually commemorated as buried at sea. He killed himself in 1921.
Okay.
But he was born in 1886 in Florence, Wisconsin, and moved to Massachusetts right around 1906.
Very interesting.
And he was the commander of the Lost Battalion?
Yeah, the commander of the Lost Battalion. It's told in a wonderful book called Finding the Lost Battalion that I read last year.
Oh, interesting. Bob, thank you.
Interesting. Thanks.
And Julie in Rice Lake, hi to you.
I'm doing okay.
Great.
I have actually two questions. I thought of an additional one while I was waiting on the phone. Do you have anything about the Beatles when they came to Milwaukee? And secondly, I've only lived in Wisconsin about 4 years, moved here from Missouri, and I heard that there was a big teacher strike in Hortonville at one time that was really dragged out and ugly, and you know, I don't know what all was involved, but evidently it's legendary. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Yes, the second question first. There was a very protracted and ugly teacher strike in Hortonville. I do not write about that in the book, but I do believe the Wisconsin Magazine of History has a very, very good and extensive article on that. And the Wisconsin Magazine of History is now online. All their issues are now online, so you could go to the State Historical Society website and search for that article. First question, Beatles in Milwaukee. No, I don't touch on that, but again, hopefully there'll be some more editions.
Yeah, you've got, are you working on another edition, or are you working on something else?
Not at the moment, I'm talking, this, it happened in Wisconsin, just landed in June, so I'm in a bit of a promotional mode right now.
Okay, and I did mention at the top of the hour, James Strang, and in about 30 seconds, can you tell us about James Strang in Burlington?
Yes, King James Strang. He would have called himself King of the Kingdom of God on Earth. This was quite a character. He had a falling out with Brigham Young in the Mormon Church in the 1840s, and he went on to govern what today would be called a cult. He eventually moved his group to Beaver Island in Lake Michigan. He was gunned down by his followers, and he was brought back to Burlington to die. And at the time of his death, he had five wives, four of whom were pregnant.
And with that, we have to conclude. Michael, I really I did enjoy your book. It was a lot of fun to read, and thank you for being with us today.
Thanks to talk much.
Appreciate it very much. Michael B. Michael, by the way, spells his last name B-I-E, in case you want to know that. If you want to go online to order or go to your local bookstore and order a copy of It Happened in Wisconsin. Michael B., the author. I'm sure there are lots of copies of that book around. It's published by Globe Pequot Press. Fun read, and thanks to Michael for being with us today to talk about it. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at hybrid vehicles and all other alternative automobile technologies. And we'll also talk with Rick Seney of FairCompare.com. Stay with us. Lots in store.